The KS7 from Kel-Tec might be short and slim on the outside, but it's long under the hood with its 18.5-inch barrel packed into its bullpup design. It's ready for home defense, backcountry hiking, or anywhere you need a compact 12-gauge shotgun. The KS7 is lightweight with a magazine capacity of 6+1 or 7+1, depending on shell size, easy to handle with rear loading and downward ejection, and standard carry handle that doubles as a sighting solution. Every KS7 produced at Kel-Tec is made in the USA by a team who takes pride in their work and believes in respect, family, and the right to bear arms. Every KS7 comes with a lifetime warranty with proof of purchase as original owner. Defend what matters most to you with the KS7 shotgun available through Kel-Tec. Learn more at KeltecWeapons.com. That's KelTecWeapons.com, and sign up for the Kel-Tec Insider and get a 15% coupon for your next order of gear and accessories. Secure your world with Kel-Tec. KelTecWeapons.com.
Now he said, yes, we do have the document, but he'll only show it to the chairman and ranking member. That is not how the Constitution works. Everybody on the Committee of Oversight, Republican and Democrats, have a right to see this unclassified document. If he doesn't come forth and allow everyone to see it, we will move contempt charges against him on Thursday. Secretary Blinken had the same problem when he would not give the documents about what happened in Afghanistan. He now realizes, yes, he should supply it to everybody on the committee. Congress has the constitutional right to oversee and to hold this government accountable.
They do. And I don't know why. It's just so weird to me that you have this government agency, that this bureaucratic agency that's like, yeah, we've got some really important evidence here. We're just not going to let you have it. Has to do with, you know, all this stuff we're invested. It's just not going to tell you. You know what that reminds me of? It's like a toddler telling their parents what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. You don't get that authority. Because you ain't the boss of the house. That's how this works. These bureaucratic agencies, they ain't the boss. Welcome back to the show. It is Wednesday, top of our first hour here. Dana Lash with you. You can listen coast to coast, terrestrially or extraterrestrially. You can stream it, you know, since we had this big thing about UFOs yesterday. I totally didn't deep dive or anything into it last night at all. Not at all. Didn't look about reverse engineering a potential alien spacecraft. None of that stuff. Seems like that would, you know, the House is having oversight hearings, just by the way. You can also stream the show. You can watch the simulcast. Let me get the greetings out of the way. YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV. You can all watch it there. So this situation with the back and forth here with the FBI and the House, I guess they think that they're just going to stall out until what? They think that they're not going to have to answer to anything? I'm just really curious as how they think this is going to go down. Because this is not how this works. Not how this works at all. So this thing with the investigation and the documents that they have and the stuff that they need to turn over. I mean, we know just from what the IG has said, from what's come out from the whistleblowers, that there's some, I mean, at least the enough of a suspicion and evidentiary standard to open an investigation. So why can't we be transparent about it? I mean, that's kind of the million-dollar question here. We're going to talk more about this because throughout the program. Also, speaking of the administration, the Biden's government, Biden is preparing to target America's gas furnaces amid the stove crackdown. We were told that this was all in our heads and that this wasn't going to happen. We were told that we were being conspiracy theorists. I thought I was being a conspiracy theorist. I don't want to do it if I'm not a conspiracy theorist, because I was reliably informed, Kane, that this wasn't going to happen and they weren't going to do this.
Yeah, me too.
So what changed? So they are coming for my gas stove?
Wait, they lied to us?
You mean the government was not honest? I am shocked. This is my shocked face and voice. I'm so surprised by this.
I too am shocked.
So much shock. It's just can't even deal. Yes, they said it's a new efficiency standard. They're going to finalize these regulations restricting which home-powered gas furnaces, stoves, etc. we're able to purchase in the future. So I have a business idea, Kane.
Yeah.
Black market gas furnaces and stoves. That's the name of the store.
Absolutely.
Black market gas furnaces and stoves. And just advertise it. Be ballsy and advertise it. And then be like, what are you going to do about it, feds? You're going to come and shut down my little black market gas furnace and stove store? That's like a whole... I just got a great business idea, like a legitimate one from this. So I think I'm going to do it. I swear to you, I will open a black market and I'll advertise it. Dude, I for real will. I'll put it in a strip mall and everything. Here's my, yeah, my black market stoves and furnaces.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Good heavens. Why are they pushing everything to electricity when, and I saw this, our friend Larry was, and Lorraine, who handles the YouTube discussion, a contributor over at Chapter and Verse. Listen to this. So EPA, Biden's EPA is going to issue power plant rules that lean on carbon capture. You know what this means. Here come the rolling blackouts. For California, at least. California is already in the thick of it. I mean, it's summer. It's hell there. They don't have enough electricity to share during the day to charge their electric cars. But hey, let's just go ahead and... let's just go ahead and like roll over and just, you know. Speaking of California, this is a for real headline. I laughed my head off when I read it last night when I was adding it to the rundown. I'm just going to say it. There's poop everywhere. San Francisco's office district is not only a ghost town, it's also covered in feces. Like, literally. So you know that they had to do... Do you guys remember when they did the poop patrol, San Francisco? That's, like, literally what they did. They had a San Francisco... I'm pulling up my notes, because some of you who maybe haven't listened for that long are like, wait, what? Yes, yeah, San Francisco has a poop patrol. Now, if you think that's crazy, they make six figures. For real. They earn... I mean, they can earn with benefits. It's like $112,000-something. I mean, we got in the wrong business. For real. The wrong business. So they said the poop patrol, with the benefits, they earn base salary $71,000 a year. They with $112,000 in benefits.
What?
Yeah, dude, for real.
What?
Yeah. This was a couple of years ago. It got so bad with everybody defecating out in the public you would think that, you know, they would probably try to deal with the homeless issue, etc. But instead, they're like, no, maybe we need more public toilets. Okay, that might be a reasonable response, right?
Sure.
To think, well, maybe it's because we need more public restroom facilities. Okay. So, you know what they decided to do? Mm-hmm. They decided to have a public toilet. Sure. A 150 square foot restroom. We talked about this when this happened. It was $1.7 million for an toilet.
Wow.
An singular toilet.
Dang.
That it seems to me like they don't really understand the best way to deal with well and money. That doesn't seem to be a responsible use of taxpayer dollars, does it?
No.
Not really. Mm-mm. So the state said that they were going to withhold funds for the city because the city cannot figure out how to use money efficiently. So they have that, and then they pay their poop patrol six figures. And that poop patrol, they get. It's what else am I going to call it? What, it's the poop team. What else do you want to call it? They wear the little vests and everything. They go around. They legit scoop up duty. They're doing their duty with duty. Oh, my gosh. Duty. What? It's their duty. Steve says it's Paw Patrol's cousin. It is. It's like Paw Patrol, but with poop. We're never going to get off this topic because I'm five. So this is how bad it is. Literally everything they touch turns to feces.
Yeah.
It does. Everything they touch. So they have their gas powered. Everything is going to get regulated out of existence. They've got rolling blackouts. They spend $1 billion on a high-speed rail from LA to San Francisco that no one needed, and nothing ever came of it. This is insane. Now, here's my other favorite story today. I was going through like getting the table set so I could get to this. I'm just going to read the story. It's New York Post. You guys remember Ellen Page, and she changed her name to Elliot Page, and she says that she's a dude.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So Elliot Page says that she experienced a transphobic attack outside of an LA hotel. She said that she was standing on a corner in West Hollywood on her way to the Pink Dot convenience store when an enraged and hateful stranger approached her, shouting obscenities. The man yelled, quote, "I'm going to blanking gay bash you, you blanket." Now, I have never seen any kind of garden variety mouth breather say they were going to gay bash you. I mean, just calling her a name would be, I guess, the societal definition of gay bashing. Who says I'm going to gay bash you? Did he go, this is MAGA country after, and then go get a Subway sandwich? Is that what he did? Elliot Smollier here. Oh my gosh. Juicy Page. It's his name now. Her name now. They said that she went into the Pink Dot shop and that the man allegedly followed her, stood in the store's doorway. Well, I'm sure there's tons of video of this then, right? Because, you know, it happened in West Hollywood. It happened at a convenience store. First off, here's the other question that I have. Why did the guy affirm her gender? Her chosen gender? Because you don't call a woman the F word for gay. That is not a term for a lesbian. You know what I mean? Like, you don't call the lesbian the F word that rhymes with maggot. You don't call, right? That's the gay dude slur, isn't it? Who calls lesbians that? Where are the lesbians at that listen to this show? That's a gay dude word, isn't it? I literally reached, I was like, have you ever been called? And they were like, everybody said that. That's a dude term. So wait a minute. You're telling me that this dude who followed her into the Pink Dot was saying that he was going to gay bash her, but he was nice enough to affirm her gender, her chosen gender? Are you kidding me? Because this 1,000% didn't happen. It's MAGA country. I'm going to go get a Subway sandwich. I'm going to gay bash you. Nobody says, nobody talks like that. That's literally nothing that ever happened. But I am right, right? That word is not used for gay chicks. It's a gay dudes, right? I mean, I don't want to sit here and get technical with the slurs, but I think that that's revealing. I do think that's revealing. So I'm just, you know, I think she wishes that she could be viewed as the F word that rhymes with maggot. I mean, I think that's what she wants, but I just the whole thing seems like very Juicy Smollier to me. It really does. So we have more in store. The latest with immigration, a Texas sheriff is recommending charges, criminal charges, in the DeSantis migrant flights to Martha's Vineyard. They're like, oh, we found the receipts. And wait until you hear, there's a couple editorials about this too, where the left is losing their minds over this. They're like, can you believe that this is actually happening? Is this real? Can you believe he can actually do this? Crazy. Well, yeah, I mean, that you mean like whether he can do that or whether like the president of the United States is just allowing people to illegally immigrate into the country? I'm curious. So we're going to get into all of that as well. You don't want to miss. When you see judicial rot running rampant and American companies embracing insanity and wokery, you got to fight back, starting with the way that we spend our money. So for years, big mobile companies have dumped millions into leftist causes, and you know, we just kind of took it because another option didn't exist. Well, now one does. Patriot Mobile is America's only Christian conservative wireless provider, and they offer dependable nationwide coverage on all three major networks, so you get the best possible service in your area without the woke propaganda. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call them at 878-PATRIOT and get free activation today with offer code Dana. Ask about their coverage guarantee as well. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT. patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Apple, in its new update, they're going to stop auto-correcting words I can't say on air, including the word that is often changed to duck, in. I'm just saying. Because none of you all don't know this because you're angels, aren't you? You're purest of hearts and motives. You have no idea what I'm talking about. You're so innocent. Look at you all innocent out there in radio land. They said that sometimes if you want to type a word, your keyboard doesn't go along with it. Apple Senior Vice President of Software Engineering said, yes, they're finally changed. I mean, it's only been 11,000 years, right? They're finally on it. I mean, I guess I'm sure there's probably some more important stuff, but nobody cares. This, I don't know. When I see the phrase deadly bacteria, I get a little nervous. So then I see the CDC says something and then I immediately don't believe it. So where do I fall on this? Deadly bacteria that kills up to 50% of patients is now endemic to U.S. Gulf Coast, says CDC, a year after it was first detected in the country. So an epidemiologist, Dr. Julia Petrus, made the warning. It's called, you ready? Burkholderia pseudomallei. Right, sounds right, yeah? It's likely lurking in soil and stagnant water across the 1,600 miles from Texas to Florida. They said that people infected with it suffer melioidosis, a severe condition that can trigger pneumonia, sepsis, and can be fatal. Doctors say they're on alert for the disease. It can initially be misdiagnosed as another infection. I don't know what, I mean, can you kill it with antibiotics? Like, what's the, I mean, so it's just like stagnant water, right? Essentially, like moist soil, that's your favorite word, and stagnant water, right? That's kind of what it is. I don't like any of those things anyway, so just avoid those, right? That seems like the smartest thing to do. This is really wild. New York Post says nearly 30 children were reported missing in Cleveland during the first 2 weeks of May in an extraordinary surge. 30, just in the first 2 weeks of May in Cleveland. They said it's extraordinary. They don't have any, there's no record of this, like, to this extent happening before. 27 kids went missing between May 2nd and May 16th, as Newburgh Heights Police Chief John Majoy warned that the disappearance have reached unprecedented levels in 2023. Says there's always peaks and valleys, but this year it seems like a pretty extraordinary year. We're seeing a lot more than we normally see. We don't know if it's trafficking or if they're involved in gang activity or drugs or what it is. He said the majority of the cases are runaways, but he feared some of them could have been victims of predators, whom he likened to wolves in sheep's clothing. That's horrible and terrifying, and I really feel for those families. A new study finds that being happily married prevents working men from burnout. I get it, because they have a family and a wife and all that or whatever to attend to, and they're not going to be burning themselves out at work. That makes sense. It's the National Research University Higher School of Economics. And a virologist hunting mystery coronavirus strain in Ohio wastewater suspects one individual has been affected for 2+ years, like consistently had it for 2+ years. Kind of interesting. We have a lot more on the way. Economics, the latest with Congress versus Ray, and so much more. Stick with us. I have some exciting news for those of you who wish you could be nearer to Hillsdale College. Now, you can be a part of Hillsdale, no matter where you are in the world. In addition to their free online courses, Hillsdale College has created something new, the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. It allows you to learn even more from Hillsdale anywhere at any time. And on the Hillsdale College Podcast Network, you'll hear podcasts that feature conversations with Hillsdale College faculty, staff, friends, alumni, as well as visiting speakers and authors discussing everything from philosophy to theology to history, economics, politics, and current events. Listen to hundreds of episodes on the network, from the Hillsdale Dialogues to the radio-free Hillsdale Hour to the Larry Arnn Show, all for free. Get informed and entertained at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com, and learn more about their free online courses and the new Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Hillsdale College, developing minds, changing hearts.
If you're using one credit card to pay off another credit card, are you really getting rid of your debt? Add that to spending even more of your tax dollars that they don't have. That's what the federal government got from this debt deal. Any reason why another deal needs to be made in the presidential election cycle? Check out the Watchdog on Wall Street podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast.
YouTube, Facebook, or DirecTV. If you're looking for the number one afternoon host in the country, you've found her. Download the podcast every day to catch up. The Dana Show.
We had dangerously high levels of wildfire smoke from thousands of miles away. Thousands of miles away. From the gloom over Yankee Stadium to the smoky haze obscuring our skyline. We could see it, we could smell it, and we felt it. And it was alarming and concerning. Last night at 10 p.m., the air quality index hit 218.
That's New York City Mayor Eric Adams, who's bemoaning the pretty wild wildfires that are raging in Canada. So Keynes totally has his tinfoil hat on about all of this. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash with you. Yeah, I've seen, I know that some of the media, they have the wildfire cameras up. And if this were, you know, flyover, I don't think it would be, they wouldn't have a wildfire camera. But because this affects them, the media people, this is major news.
Right.
It's major news for the media people. But they don't treat like flooding in Tennessee or anything the same, right? Or I think even some of the stuff in Florida, they don't treat the same. But definitely if it even hits anywhere in New York. Although, Steve, did you say that you were experiencing it in D.C.?
Yeah, it's not as bad as like New York is, but it's, I mean, it's pretty hazy here. And it smells really bad.
So it's just, I mean, they said that, wildfire smoke surrounded Yankee Stadium, that the it clouded the game last night. It's obviously it's affected the air quality. Now, Kane was saying, because there's all, New York Times has now, they have a smoke map up.
Hey.
Yeah, they do. So they said it could affect, technically, air quality, what, even all the way down. You were saying that maybe Texas might get a...
Well, yeah, it's...
I saw one projection as far as, you know, the digital models. They're showing the little wisping around thanks to the jet stream of the smoke. And some of it hits like as far south as Texas. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. So what? And it's just naturally occurring wildfires.
Is it?
Right? That happened all at the same time?
That's a shame.
Is that what? You say that like you don't believe it.
You say that like I don't believe it.
No, I mean, because you already told me that you don't.
Yeah, I don't.
This is what Kane does. Kane goes, but the thing is, like this. He's like, so
I've just seen, look, I don't take anything. Look, how long have we been doing this?
He tells me on break, he's like, look, so have you seen where all these are happening? Did you see the satellite at the exact same time, all of them?
Is that how it sounds when I talk
to
you?
Well, no, I mean, I'm trying to make a distinction from your voice and mine.
Yeah, I just am skeptical.
It's the only guy voice I have.
I think being skeptical is healthy
on many levels. I mean, there's skeptical, and then there's, you're just...
Okay, well,
you're begging the question because you're assuming
only because
that we all
I've
think
seen,
that it...
I've seen what's going out on social media, you know, not only on Twitter, but Facebook, everywhere else, where they're showing the satellite photos of these fires somehow miles and miles apart. There's several fires starting at the same time, and they're showing the satellite photo of all these... Now, how can these fires, all miles apart, start at the same time? I have questions, that's all. I'm skeptical.
I mean, yeah, there's some good... There's some, you know, I think it's good, always good to be skeptical. Air quality alert is at 20, trending on 20. And they said it's pretty hazy kind of almost everywhere. They said the New York City said their air quality hasn't been this bad since the 60s. What about the crime, though?
Right.
Also, look at the crime. It's probably pretty bad, too. Just saying, you know, good heavens. Just saying. We got, I'm going to move on because we have a whole bunch of stuff to hit. We've, I might be jiggling around, by the way, guys, some of the organization of the rundown today. So as far as climate, I saw two things. First, we're all going to die, and then better kill our cows. Yeah, that's how I just have it. It's Cowboys State Daily. Potential for catastrophic U.S. electric grid failures this summer, a reality. Yeah, it's a real story. They said that a reliability assessment of the nation's electrical grid shows increasing potential for blackouts during heat waves. Coal-fired power plants are being retired, but for enough new gen sources are being put on the grid. Huh. It's almost like we said this would happen. If I was trying to kneecap a country, I would totally rush things through like this, just like the way that they're doing. So that's why I think they're trying to kneecap a country, because that's the way you would do it, right? It's like if you walk on the street in traffic, you're going to get hit by a car. Now, if your design was to get hit by a car, then you would walk out of the street in traffic, right? I'm just saying, you know, it's Occam's razor here. So the North American Reliability Corporation, they found that at least this season, the generation resources on the grid, they're wondering if we're going to be able to keep up for normal demand. If we have any kind of heat wave or anything like that, which is common because, you know, summer, that it's going to be bad because wind and solar energy are intermittent. They can go offline for days upon days at a time. And you have to have all renewable resources have to have backup. You have to have either hydroelectric, nuclear, coal, or natural gas. And people are terrified of nuclear for some reason. And the coal-fired power plants, they're being retired. They're not they're not up maintaining like with our, they're not keeping up. They're being retired before any new generation sources are even being put on the grid. So they're putting billions of dollars into renewable energy. They're building these stupid wind farms and these solar farms. And it's a they're moving at the slowest possible glacial pace, as you can imagine. It is so slow. They are moving slower than my grandma would move through a store, because she'd have to touch everything. One trip for one thing would take 5,000 hours. This is 50,000 times slower. And then you have the environmentalist opposition, the regulations, all that other stuff. So this is, I mean, this is going to be a legit, this is going to be a legitimate issue. Now, I'm always amazed when countries come up with very weird ways to deal with what they think is an issue. So the Irish government, I don't know what's going on in Ireland. They're restricting speech, and now they want to spend tons of money, millions of dollars, to sacrifice 65,000 cows to the god of climate change. This is akin to throwing somebody in a volcano to make the volcano god happy. So it's the climate change religion. You know, that's what happens. Something's, there's going to be a moral standard imposed. So which standard is it going to be? $1 million question. So they said that this budget, it's a leaked document that reports that the Irish government is planning to murk 65,000 cows a year for the next 3 years at a cost of 200 million euros a year to meet its climate targets. This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. The Irish Times, they said that the Irish Creamery Milk Suppliers Association almost sounds like a ban. They said any plan to cull Ireland's dairy herd must be voluntary. I don't know why I'm saying it like that. Just maybe it's because it's Irish. Pat McCormick told News Talk Breakfast that if there's to be a scheme, it needs to be a voluntary scheme. That it's absolutely critical because there's no point in calling numbers from an individual who's barred on the back of huge financial commitment on the back of achieving a certain target that's taken from under him. So it doesn't look like anything about the mandate is voluntary, because it looks like a mandate. They're trying to reduce Irish livestock. And this is something that we saw with the Dutch farmers, too. The PJ Media noted the Dutch farmer citizen movement won a historic victory in Parliament earlier this spring. They ran essentially literally on the issue of rolling back plans to shut down food production and replace them with this corporatized system of raising bugs. No joke. So now they want to cull Irish cows. For what? Not because of disease or anything else, just because climate. It's a religion. They want to sacrifice the cows to the god of climate. The thing is if these people actually really believe this, that'd be one thing. But they don't. They don't believe it. I mean, what ultimately it is this is about control. And they are acting as though they're doing something. They care for the planet. We care so much about it. If you don't agree with us, then you must hate Mother Earth. But it's not about that at all. It's about control. It's about redistribution. It's about making people subjugated to the state. Ultimately, who's going to be in charge of food production if they're killing? I mean, 65,000 cows a year. It's crazy. That's livestock. That's food. That's milk. It's protein. All kinds of stuff. But this is their cult. And like I said, it would be one thing if they really believed that they were doing something good for the planet, but I don't believe that they think that. This is one of the dumb, this is stupid. This is some medieval stuff. We have to go and sacrifice the cows to make the sun happy so it doesn't burn us. Jiminy Christmas. So our climate headlines there. Now, a couple of other things that I want to make sure we get to. And I don't think I actually had this on the list. Did you guys see what the Southern Poverty Law Center did yesterday? It was pretty amazing. I don't know if you're familiar with the Southern Poverty Law Center, but it's kind of a joke of a organization. I mean, I think it's a hate organization, ultimately. I mean, it is. They added parental rights groups like Moms for Liberty, Defending Education, and Parents' Rights in Education. and a whole bunch of other groups to their quote-unquote hate map. And they put these groups literally next to Ku Klux Klan groups. Southern Poverty Law Center. Now, they said that they called the parental rights movement, quote, uptown Klans. That's what they, that's how they referred to them. A researcher over at SPLC said that. They were comparing them, like, back during Brown v. Board of Education. And this, I mean, they, if you think, the Southern Poverty Law Center is itself a hate group, but they're a hate group that has influence because Biden just, he brought on a lawyer, confirmed to the 11th Circuit, and the FBI cited them on that, when they were going after the whole radical Catholic hate group thing, the FBI cited them in this memo that came out earlier this year. So they're a hate group. I mean, this is a hate group that whose hate map inspired Floyd Corkins to go and try to massacre everyone at Family Research Council at their DC office a few years back. And he went off their map and he had the map literally out on his person from their website. So they do this. I mean, when you look at some of these groups literally were founded by black female Democrats. And they're classifying these groups along with Klan groups. No joke. That's what the Southern Poverty Law Center is doing. You know, some of the groups, like the one that's based in Virginia. And actually, I just tweeted her, Azra Nomani, what her group is on this map. She's a Muslim Democrat. And the group she founded is listed literally next to Klan groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. Just because they're mad over parents speaking out and challenging federal control over their children. This is just inexcusable. So inexcusable. Did you see what's been happening in California? Armenian parents speaking out. I can't wait till they're called white adjacent. You know it's coming. Actually, I think it already did. I actually think I saw a tweet. Verified Journo actually tweet this. That's coming. When you look at Michigan, when you look in California, when you look at a lot of the parents that are speaking out, these are a lot. It's not just white Republican parents. They're black Republican parents, black Democrat parents, Muslim Democrat, Muslim Republican, Armenian, independent. I mean, who knows? But they desperately need you to think that it's only white Republican parents that are speaking out about this. When, in fact, in some cities, the white Republican parents are the minorities in the group. That's a fact. This is just absolutely awful. This is how badly they want to control your children, and it's all the more evidence as to why you need to push back twice as hard. We have a lot on the way. We have, we have more cultural Marxism. We have some news with regards to economy. The Congress versus Chris Ray. So much more. You don't want to miss any of this. Oh, and Hunter Biden's in trouble again with his baby mama. A judge is demanding that he show up in court again.
Catch The Dana Show noon to 3 p.m. Eastern on DirecTV Channel 347.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
We're about fighting and winning on battlefields. And we're all about readiness. We're all about readiness now and readiness in the future and modernization. I think the accusations of woke are grossly over-exaggerated.
I don't think they're grossly over-exaggerated at all. I think the existence of any kind of wokery at all whatsoever cannot be exaggerated enough, particularly in the military. That's, General Milley. I'm not a fan of that guy, especially after he was before the... What book was he pushing? It was that... one of Ibram X. Kendi's books.
Yes.
And he was saying, yeah, I read the, just good night. He's like, yeah, we're focused. We're all about readiness. Are you, though? Because, I mean, just over the past couple of years, we've had a handful of stories that seem to contradict that statement. It seems that there's an inordinate amount of attention that has been thrown upon the ideology of cultural Marxism, which very lately has manifest as the trans movement and fighting parents and everything else. Good heavens. Do you believe that, Kane, what General Milley says there?
I understand why he would have to go out there and say that, but clearly it's not true.
No, it's not true. He seems like, so if I say it seriously, then maybe you'll believe it.
Right.
No, I was watching after I got off air yesterday. I was in my office and I was writing up. I included a link. I sent the link out to all of you subscribers to Chapter and Verse over at Substack of all the stuff about the Ghost Army that we talked about yesterday, the deception unit, the mobile deception unit. That's what made it really, truly unique from previous, you know, because it's all wars. Deception is a part of any war. But what made this singularly new and unique was that it had to be an entirely self-contained mobile unit that could like take that could perform massive deception operations on command. That's what made it different. And I, you know, I'm sitting here looking at all this and I was going over all these speeches that Patton gave and then you got Milley. It's just wild in comparison, right? To go from that to this guy. Ugh. All right. So coming up later on in the show, we have Vivek Ramaswamy is going to be joining us. He's been on the show once before. He's running for the presidency. He'll be joining us in our third hour. And on the way, why would we believe anything from the CIA? Especially, I'm sure you've seen the headlines about this dam in Ukraine. And then, of course, the Nord Stream pipeline, or as KJP would say, the Nordstrom pipeline. We've got that. We've got a whole bunch more on the way. Don't miss a second. Stay with us.
Does it seem believable to you that Russia would destroy a dam and flood ethnic Russian villages and cut off a water supply to Crimea? I mean, that doesn't seem logical. It seems about as logical as blowing up one's own pipeline, doesn't it?
We've come to no conclusions on this. We're working with the Ukrainians. We'll try to get as much information as we can.
Ah, well, that's John Kirby. He's... Everyone's asking, well, who's responsible? It's the Novokakhovka Dam that was blown up. All types, I mean, just widespread flooding. It's a Soviet-era hydroelectric dam, and it collapsed due to an explosion. And so this flood, what, they had like 20,000 some odd people that had to be evacuated, all of this. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. The big question has been, well, who's behind it? This, like, along with the Nord Stream stuff. So the, I think the first, because the line first came out was that, oh, well, look, maybe it was the Russians that did it. Oh, it's Ukraine that did it. And I don't trust a single thing coming from anything because I immediately, do you trust? I don't. Kane's, he shares his tinfoil. Thank you. Yeah, you share your, I actually have a tinfoil hat back there. I may have to bring it over here. But the Russian side, they're saying that they're making this thing about Ukrainian strikes against the floodgates. In fact, Washington Post quoted one of the Ukrainian major generals who is the commander of the Kherson counteroffensive. And he was saying that the Ukrainians had conducted a test strike at one of the floodgates and they made three holes in the metal and something. That's the Washington Post said. And this was from December 2022. And then Ukraine was blaming Russia for the destruction of it. Russia is blaming Ukraine because the waters feed Crimea. And so they, I don't know. But then you have the Ukrainian commander that said this on record last year. So who do you believe? What do you think, Kane? Who do you believe? Pick a side. Who do you believe?
Do I have to pick a side?
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that that would be a self-sabotage thing that Russia would do. I don't believe that. I think the people of Crimea are traditionally Russian, and I think that's part of the whole conflict here is Russia's desire to, you know, have Crimea again. So why would you do any of that and be Russia, who is then now against the very people they were trying to, quote unquote, you know, bring back to the motherland? I don't get it. Mm. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't believe. It seems more like an act of war, and I don't think Russia would do it to themselves.
Red State has a huge deep dive looking at all these message boards and everything else. It gets really into the weeds on it, but it is very interesting though, because they noted that when they were looking at the timeline of when it happened and then how it was reported, there was So a guy named Clint Ehrlich works for a Russian-funded think tank, and apparently they write was patient zero for the story, but there's several problems with the propaganda. They note that first the Ukrainians did artillery strikes on the floodgates to temporarily flood an area, then they decided not to do it, and then second, floodgates are designed to let water out without destroying the dam. Third, it might be possible to breach a dam with artillery fire, but it would take hundreds of rounds to do so, assuming it could be done. They said when Russian state media reported an explosion at the dam around 2 a.m. Tuesday, the mayor said it was nonsense, and then they had a Telegram post translation. They said it's safe to say the Russian-appointed mayor of Novokakhovo would have noticed several hundred, rounds hitting their hydroelectric dam. They said that the video shows that the dam suffered a catastrophic failure that was not the result of water passing through the floodgates. They said that Russian military correspondents were reporting on the destruction and the flooding was, they were talking about how it was destroying Ukrainian military positions. And apparently they went on mill blogger groups and everything. They were on Telegram, all this stuff. And they said that one said that the video was old and the demolished section actually took place during the Russian withdrawal last fall. So if the Ukrainians did it, you would have to get tons of explosives through Russian lines, wouldn't you? I don't know. I mean, and then. What is the damage that Russia would incur from the destruction of the dam? What they would I think they said that they had some fortifications on one of the rivers there. And the reason I'm like, because normally I've been looking at this 30,000 foot view. It seems like people are so eager to use anything as like the, raison d'etre, the cause of war. That's what they're looking for. Like, what's going to be the thing that we can say, this is an act of war. And you just said it too, when you were talking about it, Kane. So what do they gain from it? I mean, do they get to block any kind of attack from across the river that, they was trying to coordinate with, Ukrainian offensive? I don't know. But I don't think it is. It's just weird to me. There's so much propaganda involved with every single bit of this. There's nothing that doesn't happen that isn't just drenched in propaganda from either side. From either side. And this is why having a media that asks questions is so important, because remember, in conflict, deception's part of conflict. And one of the responsibilities of a free press, untethered from, partisanship, is that they can report clear facts to the public that are not tainted by the propaganda of the government. And you don't have that anymore. I mean, hell, you don't have it in Ukraine. You don't have it in Russia. You don't have it in the United States either. Maybe a few individual sites. But that's what's so tough to. It's one of the reasons we don't focus a lot on it. And if there's something that affects American interest, I'll focus on it. We'll discuss it. But this, I'm just going to say, what, in 1941, they destroyed a dam in Ukraine to slow down an army. What's I'm going to say? History and stuff. So I don't know. Just take from that what you will. A lot of propaganda there. I mentioned earlier, last hour actually, the parents, I don't know if you've seen some of this. The parents in California who have been, I saw the video yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw this. It is pretty amazing. The parents lost their minds over, they were protesting outside of a school and they met, I guess, some people who were protesting in favor of teaching like the DEI and all this other stuff in the classrooms, and a bunch of parents, they got into a brawl. It was a really wild video. And I don't know if you saw, I don't even think we can show it, but there's some words that came out there. There's some words, but because we were talking about that Southern Poverty Law Center story and this idea that all of the people that are objecting to this, that are objecting to, everything from, the books in the libraries to everything else, that it's all a bunch of white Republicans, and it's not. And I think that's so, these people are, the media is erasing the ethnicity of people if it goes against their narrative. And so, like in Michigan, for example, I'm sure you've seen some of the video. I'm pulling up my notes here. I'm sure you've seen some of the video of parents in Michigan protesting and objecting to what's being taught in schools. But the media doesn't write about it because they're Muslim parents. They don't want to talk about it. They had a fight that broke out. A couple of entities have this. At one school board meeting, this is the one in California, where it was Antifa and parental rights activists. It was a Glendale's Unified School District's administration meeting last night, and they were discussing the Alphabet curriculum. And they said that law enforcement arrested three people amid the mayhem after the protest exceeded the bounds of peaceful assembly. And there was mayhem. Look, some of these parents are, you're talking about their kids. They're not going to mess with you. You know, they'll beat you down for their kids. They'll take an assault charge for their kids, especially when you're pushing to override their parental rights and responsibility to determine what is or isn't appropriate age-wise for their child in the classroom. They had Armenian and Hispanic parents. The majority of the parents were Armenian and Hispanic that were outside. So as the left would say, you know, maybe, you know, dark-haired people, brown people. That's what the left would say. And they had Antifa that showed up. Antifa Southern California, they called for activists to counter the parents who they labeled racist hate groups. I have another piece where they're talking about the racism of these parents. Oh my gosh. The racism of Armenian and Hispanic parents. Those racist Hispanics. I mean, it's ridiculous. Some of the parents told Daily Signal that their kids changed in locker rooms multiple times with students of the opposite sex that, I mean, had their bits and pieces all hanging out in the locker room. That's a big deal. You have to think of this, too. What happens if you're like an 18-year-old male in the locker room and there's a 15-year-old girl in the locker room? That's a charge. Is it not? I mean, is that not a charge? They said 42 minutes into the meeting, the board president stopped the public comment session. Law enforcement was locking down the building because Antifa showed up. There was no problem until Antifa showed up. Know that. According to footage from Los Angeles networks and a lot of on-site journalists, all these masked Antifa progressive protesters with their progress flags and pink bandanas showed up to antagonize the parents. They showed up to pick a fight on purpose. These people who don't have kids in this school, people who probably don't even live in this area, get called out or bussed in to show up and terrorize parents and a community at the Glendale Unified School Board meeting. Because Antifa sent out the call. And so a physical brawl broke out. And the dad was dressed up as a woman. He said that the parents were hiding behind their hate. And one Glendale teacher decided to lecture the Armenian American parents. And one of them was lecturing the parents on suppression and oppression. Oh my gosh! Can I just say, the absolute white progressive privilege of lecturing Armenians about oppression. I can't, man. See, this is why liberty is so, or education is so important to liberty. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm like reading a whole piece. Like one teacher was going off on the Armenian parents, criticizing their objection to critical race theory, diversity, equity, and inclusion. Oh my gosh. And then they had the absolute, oh man, I'm not going to get through this one. This, and I'm just going to say, this blonde teacher, blonde hair, blue-eyed teacher, progressive, communist, she is just lecturing. In the video is really hard to hear because there's a lot of objections and things like that. But she said, quote, "Armenians talk about genocide, but they don't want to talk about the indigenous genocide in 1850 and the lack of reparations for indigenous and black people in this country." Are you kidding me? Are you serious? They talk about, like, oh, just some flippant genocide. Are you serious? And it's, I bet this woman votes for the party that actually enabled the Trail of Tears, the genocidal march that Democrats sent my ancestors on, right? Pretty sure she votes for that party. Yeah. Yeah, you know.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Chris Licht is leaving CNN. He's out. Apparently desperate and devastated. That's how he's being described. He tried to cling on after the scathing Atlantic article that laid bare his failings before David Zaslav announced his firing on a morning call. So he's out. That was fast. It was quite quick. Colleges are being fleeced by ghost students stealing financial aid. We're all surprised. San Francisco Chronicle. Nobody knows how much money these fraudsters have managed to grab by impersonating enrollees. They have a whole story. In fact, one guy, Richard Valicenti, U.S. Department of Education, notified him that there was an overpayment of a $3,000 Pell grant that he had used. And he's like, I never applied for a Pell. He was a stolen identity. So these people take these stolen identities and they defraud even this. It makes it easier because everything's centralized in D.C. with regards to student loans, yay, and all that stuff. I mentioned this yesterday, but I didn't have time to actually hit it all. People in Japan, it is a true story. They're signing up for classes to teach them how to smile after wearing masks for too long. Ryan Savadera at Daily Wire. Apparently, they became so used to wearing face masks during the coronavirus pandemic that they have to learn how to smile again. They hold up mirrors to their faces and use their hands to stretch their mouth up. Sounds like Attack on Titan. Stretch their mouths up and outward, forcing themselves to smile. Smile education is what it's called. Not making this up. It's a true thing. Actual thing. Stay with us. A lot more on the way.
Between Twitter, Facebook, or any of your social media, there's a lot of information out there. That's why your lovable curmudgeon is here to help you make sense of it all. Live or on demand, The Dana Show.
The other thing I want to keep reminding drivers of is that many American drivers, as a matter of fact, a majority, have access to some kind of charging infrastructure in the form of a plug in the wall. There are many ways in which charging an EV has more in common with charging your phone than filling up a car that runs on gas. It's just a different paradigm.
I am short-circuiting right now with the amount of jokes that I could make. That is the Secretary of Transportation, the former mayor of South Bend, and previous Vice Rear Admiral of the canoe fleet at Camp Wimby Tonka.
Rear Admiral.
It's a real position, Kane.
Yes, it is.
Secretary Mayor Newmom, Poot Booty Juice. Don't you correct me on the, I say it like our President of the United States and that one guy on MSNBC who thinks that he's the second coming of Shakespeare on stage. Your lovable curmudgeon here with you, Dana Lash. What about people who live in apartments? What do they do? Well, I imagine that most people, the majority, in fact, have access to extension cords. They can just hang those out of their window and plug in their cars. It works just like that. Does it, though? Wait, but how many volts is it? I know enough to know that I should ask a question about that, but because I don't want to get electrocuted or blow something up or break something or whatever. Because there's a little bit of a difference there, yeah?
Yes.
Kane?
Yeah, it takes, if you want to effectively charge.
You're calm now?
Look, if you want your car to take, I don't know, 21 to 22 hours to charge, you can find a way to plug it in, I guess, like you would plug in your refrigerator. But in reality, you would need a plug that's closer to the plug that, like, your dryer uses, or maybe if you have an electric stove, the one your electric stove uses. That's 240 volts. That takes, you know, more.
Mm-hmm.
So not everybody can just plug it in, and that's why they sell the Tesla walls, too. Because they understand that you can't just plug it in. You can't just plug it in like you do your vacuum cleaner.
And you would probably have to get, like, I don't know, maybe an electrician who knows what they're doing to put something like that in.
Yeah.
Seems like. But, you know, you can just. I love his statement is so stupid. Many American drivers, as a matter of fact, a majority. of drivers, they got access to some kind of charging infrastructure in the form of a plug in the wall. We're talking about plugs. In the form of a plug on the wall. And, but, so he's saying that some don't?
Yeah, only the majority.
Only the majority. I mean, there's a small minority who have, they don't know what plugs are. They've never seen them. They have no access to them.
I can't believe we're doing this. But yeah, just so people know, 120 volt, the regular plug you plug a lamp into or your, you know, your vacuum cleaner, it would supply 2 or 3 miles of range per hour of charge of your EV.
This is one, I'm trying so hard because this is not waterproof mascara. I'm trying really, really hard.
So you're not charging your car you're charging your phone. It's just not happening like that. Sorry.
Just ask your neighbor if they can, you can borrow their plug. I don't think plugs are shareable like that.
Plus electricity's not free.
You mean it's free? I think he thinks it is.
Oh my God.
Who wants to tell him?
It just comes out of the wall.
Just this, you just get it out of the wall.
The plugs have it.
Yeah, just put it in the plug.
Right.
Just plug it in.
Every plug I've used had it.
I've never used a plug, they didn't have it. Oh my gosh. You know, I just want to know, who are the people that don't have access to a plug? What do they do? We need some plug equity.
And where's that charity?
This is what happens when you hire somebody who's only accomplishment. Well, this is what happens when you hire someone who's just who wants to be known for being gay. What are your can I see your resume, please? It says here you're gay.
That's right.
When do I start? That's right. Give me the job. Okay. Hiring for a heart surgeon. It says here you're gay. Did you ever go to medical school? Nope. You're hired. I hope you know what you're doing, doctor. Well, I don't, but I am gay.
you guys have any plugs around here?
Yeah. Let me tell you how a plug works. You just plug it in. I'm never going to get off this topic. Can we save this for forever? This really competes with my Kylie Jenner. You know, we're just realizing stuff. It really competes with that soundbite. I don't know which one I like more. I mean, he is the... at least she created a business and is a billionaire because she makes money off Instagram. I don't know what the hell he does. He shows up and in a hard hat like Bob Birder. Bob the Builder.
Energy. And I feel like this year is really about like the year of just realizing stuff. And everyone around me, we're all just like realizing things.
Never realized things before. that's Secretary Mayor Newmom poop booty juice. For real though, who are the people that don't have plugs?
Well, you know, the majority of people, it's like, well, you know, the majority of people, many American drivers, you know, they have access to sleeves. As a matter of fact, a majority of them do.
I mean, just what a statement. This is what happens when you hire based on identity, though. Mm. It's our transportation secretary. By the way, you know that they're striking again, I think, at one of the ports in L.A.? Mm-hmm. Now we hear about, oh, well, maybe there's going to be another supply chain thing. Great. Where's Secretary Mayor Newmom at? Is he out there talking about any of this? Just wondering. Because there were reports. They said... They had stoppages. It's a West Coast port labor issue. Some Long Beach rail shipments have been paused. They've been persisting. The West Coast port labor issues have been persisting from LA to Seattle. CNBC, not even 24 hours ago. Supply chain frustration mounting. And then this guy.
Well, let me tell you how plugs work. There's electricity in them. And to get it out, you got to put that plug in there. And then you got electricity. And that's how plugs work. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
Oh, man. this. I can't even deal with it. Oh, man. Okay.
How does like a Saturday Night Live not jump on things like this?
Right?
Like, come on.
He is literally, you don't even have to hire somebody. Just bring him on SNL and he would do it.
Right?
Right?
Just be yourself.
It's all you have to do. I mean, I just, and the electricity in there, it's just in the walls. It's where it comes from. Where does it come from, Secretary Booty Juice? The walls. It's where the plugs are. That's why they put plugs in the walls. Gosh, she's one of the dumbest people I've ever heard. Okay, I just want to sit here and make fun of him literally for the rest of the show, but we have more things to do. Although, don't judge me if I come back to this, because it's just, it's too good. I just want to call him Biden's diversity hire. I think that's accurate to put it like that. It's just the diversity hire. So, and yeah, and Kane's already saying he's going to take it for today's stupidity. Oh my gosh, I can't deal, guys. It's just too much. Okay, so I want to get in back to this, the FBI versus Ray. See, the government, when you look at who this administration keeps in positions of authority, who they have, and who they go from people who are super corrupt and then people who are just dumb. I don't know if Booty Juice is corrupt. I think he's actually too dumb. Because you have to have a little bit of smarts to play in that kind of game. But Daily Caller gets into the House Oversight Committee. They've unveiled their contempt resolution. This was this morning this came out. House Oversight and Government Accountability Committee released a resolution holding FBI Director Chris Wray in contempt of Congress ahead of the committee hearing tomorrow. They said they've been incredibly clear they have to produce that unclassified FD 1023 record to the custody of the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability. To date, they've refused to comply, obviously. They said the case isn't closed, as the White House, Democrats, and the FBI would have the American people believe. Super important. They have lost trust in the FBI's. This resolution, when you're refusing to be transparent and be held accountable, then yeah, by all means. So they're scheduled to mark up this contempt resolution in the Thursday hearing. Then they're going to vote on whether or not they're going to hold him in contempt. It's expected to pass. And Comer has been seeking hard copies of that document, that FD 1023 document that's at FBI headquarters. And in that document, well, at least that's what it's supposed to contain, interview notes from a longtime bureau source who was accusing the then, at the time, Vice President Joe Biden of being involved in a bribery scheme. And Comer's been wanting that document. And the FBI is going, well, we would give it to you, but it would jeopardize an ongoing investigation. Man, it's a weird defense. Well, we would give you this, but it would jeopardize the other criminal stuff that we're looking at that they did. All sounds above board, right? All sounds above board. Telling you what. All right, so some of the other, because we have Florida Man on the way. We're also going to get, I got some more cultural Marxism. And we're also going to get into some 2024. Vivek Ramaswamy is going to be joining us in our third hour today. He's been on once before. I think it was like right after, I want to say it was relatively close to when he announced his run. It's been, I think, a couple of months that he was on. Yeah, so he's going to join us at the bottom of our third hour.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
So do you guys remember the story? We had this headline, Florida Man who says that he's living underwater for months. A retired Navy commander and university professor, Joe DeTruri, he spent close to 100 days confined in an underwater habitat about 30 feet below the surface of the Florida coast. He broke the record for longest time spent underwater on May 14th. He's still down there. He's apparently going to wait for 100 days. It's on Friday. And so he said that he shrank. He said that he has shrunk at least a half an inch due to the pressure. And when he was asked whether or not if he expects to grow back to the height that he was? He says, I don't know. That's that has to have like a health complication, right? Like that would, I don't know. A Florida man was arrested with fentanyl while impeding traffic with a homeless sign. Lee County, Florida. A Florida man was arrested for drug possession, obstructing traffic. He stood in the middle of an intersection with a sign while holding bags of fentanyl. The sign read, hungry, homeless, anything helps. And then he, law enforcement deemed that as a distraction and visual obstruction for motorists. They said it was a hazardous use of right of way. And when he saw the cops, though, he departed the intersection, tried to conceal the cardboard sign in his pocket. And they found lots of fentanyl, apparently. Apparently white powder bag and a pink powder bag, both which tested positive for fentanyl. So he's arrested on a whole slew of charges. You're just going to stand out there with bags of fentanyl in the middle of the road? Was he trying to get arrested? I mean, apparently. I mean, I guess he is.
Was he trying to sell it?
Yeah, but I don't, I mean, is he like dangling it? That's one thing the article didn't say. Like, is he dangling it out there like free fentanyl or something? I don't know. Let's see. This Florida man says, quote, damn, that's a nice bike, before taking man's bike. Miami-Dade County police arrested a Florida man Monday after he was accused of stealing a victim's bike and then taking cash out of his wallet while he was sitting at a bus stop in Northwest Miami-Dade. According to police, the victim was at the bus stop with his bicycle resting against his leg, and 36-year-old Adante McKinney and three men approached him. Authorities said the suspects told the victim, damn, that's a nice bike, and then literally took it and ran away. The victim chased the suspect, but lost sight of him. And then when the victim returned to the bus stop, McKinney picked him up by his hoodie and pinned him against the wall next to the bus bench. Then he put the victim down, offered him to take off his shoes and socks. The victim took off his shoes, wouldn't take off his socks. McKinney forcibly removed them, took his cell phone, $40 from his wallet, threw the wallet and cell phone back at him. And then police arrived at the scene. They detained McKinney after the victim called 911. So he was booked. No bond set yet. He's got two warrants out for domestic violence, though. So that's, golly. I mean, geez. Swashbuckler seen stealing Captain Morgan's statue in Inglewood. Yeah. Apparently, they're looking for this guy. It was at Inglewood Business May 19th. They said that this Florida thief used a blue two-door pickup and then was traveling with a canine first mate. I hope the dog's okay. And then legit stole this Captain Morgan statue. Of all the things to steal, they're looking for him. Police are looking for this guy. I also have, I got another one. A man accused of jumping into Busch Gardens alligator enclosure, arrested. Why would you jump in there? Tampa police arrested 20-year-old Jacob Percival in Tampa Monday evening. He and two other people made their way to the gator habitat. Did they know what they were doing? One of his friends recorded it. They posted it on social media. The detectives say the video helped them identify and locate him. He points to the crowd and says, another wild Karen, crikey, in the video. That's what he says in the video. Someone in the crowd just shouted at him to get out. A woman said, it's very dangerous. You're going to get hurt. And, Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation founder said, that was stupid. That was their direct quote. So they arrested. I mean, golly, how do you get in that in the first place? I would just think that they would have cameras and that they would know. But, of course, are people that stupid, really? I don't know. Guess so. Third hour next.
I will never apologize for standing up for an LGBTQ2+ kids' rights.
That seems kind of problematic. That's it's Justin Trudeau, Canada's Pete Buttigieg up there, who can't talk. He just, gosh. He sounded so frustrated too. The LG, it's just some, it's like listening to a drunk girl on the dance floor at a wedding reception try to sing Holla Back Girl when the DJ spins that. Well, they don't spin it, they just put it on their computer now. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you, your lovable curmudgeon. Always good to be with you. We're at the top of our third hour this Wednesday, and coming up at the bottom of the hour, presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy joins us to talk about just some of this stuff that, because he announced that he's running for office and he's been putting some policy positions out there. And we're going to talk to him about some of that. So lots of stuff to hit today. Now, I have a new story involving your favorite first son. You know who this is. Hunter Biden.
The child, the baby?
The baby, 50-something-year-old baby infant Hunter Biden. He's like a Ricky Bobby, like a Talladega Nights character. So apparently the 48 hours. So, you, okay, let me roll this back. I'm going to set this up because it's worth it to know. So you guys know the story of how he bought this handgun, right? He got he lied on his, that's one of the things that people have been wanting him investigated for. He lied on this 4473 and, you know, he wasn't honest about the fact that he was on like a ton of drugs, and he went and bought this handgun while he was on drugs per his memoir. And the 48 hours before he made the purchase is apparently something else. So in the first 48 hours before he bought his handgun, and all of this again under investigation by the feds, he was being hounded about hundreds of thousands of dollars that he owed in debts, juggling texts from his brother's widow and her sister, who were also his lovers, and the sister, not just the widow. Have you seen him?
That crack is something else.
I mean, have you seen him? Oh, man, I have a question that I was going to ask you off air, Kane. And coordinated what appears to be a drug deal at a local 7-Eleven with a man saved in his phone as Q. This is from the Free Beacon. The Justice Department prosecutors are reportedly investigating the younger Biden for several potential offenses related to his October 12th, 2018 purchase, including whether he lied on the application, etc. So they're looking, Free Beacon was looking at all these emails, photographs, and text messages from his abandoned laptop, and it shows how unbelievably chaotic those 48 hours were up to the point he went to the gun store, and it shows further evidence that he was a wild crackhead at the time. He was asleep with a crack pipe in his mouth on October 8th. He purchased the gun on October 19th. So that's according to the data, the metadata on the from the phone and all of that stuff and the file. And then, on October 8th, he fell asleep with a crack pipe in his mouth a couple of days after he purchased the gun. And then on October 19th, Hallie Biden texted him a photo of crack cocaine paraphernalia that he forgot on a table.
So before and after the gun purchase.
Yeah. Yeah. So on October 10th, in the early morning, he got a high balance alert email from his bank warning that the outstanding balance on his credit card had exceeded $65,000. He apparently ignored the warning, texted an individual he met days earlier at a 7-Eleven, and the individual refers to himself as Junior. Hunter Biden saved him in the phone as Q. He wrote the man at 9:47 a.m., "Can you meet me at 7-Eleven now?" A day earlier, the man texted Hunter Biden, "Hey, this Junior, the one you got that at the 7-Eleven." Yeah. Wow. And he told Hunter Biden he was free to meet him that afternoon. Biden agreed. Q asked whether or not Biden wanted to purchase, quote, the same thing. And so a Free Beacon review of phone records found the number where Hunter reached Q was associated with an individual that has a long criminal rap sheet, including drug charges. When the Free Beacon reached out to him, the man identified himself as Junior, but then hung up when asked about his interactions with Biden. Now, remember, Biden said he was smoking crack every 15 minutes that spring. The Parmesan cheese. Shortly after midnight, Q texted Hunter to say his phone had been stolen, gave Biden the address of another individual named John John, whom Hunter could meet instead. By the way this guy texts, because Free Beacon has the screenshots of the text, he writes a word, period, another word, period, another word, period. So his texts go, yo, it's Q. Hoping my texts reached, yeah, re-lost cell. This number is a contact. Number four, me, feel free to hit me back. Yeah, that's how this guy talks. That's how he texts. All of his messages. I can't even, that's why I'm not reading all of them, because it's ridiculous. They don't know if Biden ever made it to the 7-Eleven or attended the private party at John John's house, because the guy texted, come on, dude, you can do it by the way you invited to my bro, John John, private party starting this afternoon. Check me out there. But that evening, somebody, Free Beacon says, presumably Hunter Biden, withdrew $800 in cash from his account at Wells Fargo ATM in Delaware. And they got the paperless receipt. Interesting. The location says Rittenhouse. That's so funny. Hours after his first text to Q, Elizabeth Secundi, Haley Biden's sister, asked Hunter to wire her money. Yeah, he slept with both Hallie and her sister. Okay, see, this is why I'm saying, like, Bo cannot have been the one who was the only one who was normal. If he married a girl, if he married some broad who her and her sister would sleep around with his brother, then I'm questioning him now, too. This whole family's white trash. So then the next day, his ex-wife texted him. He was like, oh, you didn't owe me. You didn't send me the $6,000 you owe me. So he's got all the women he's sleeping with hitting him up for money. And then he was supposed to have lunch plans with his daughter Finnegan in Philly. Ugh, I'm not even going to text the love text. I'm not even going to read those. It's gross. Wow, so nasty. Anyway, yeah. I mean, this is like the 48 hours leading up to this. Now, the New York Times had an account of his gun purchase where they said that they think that he may have been sober that day. How nice. And that he went into a gun store on a whim, hoping to spend time at a shooting range that would help him avoid relapse. We all know that's BS. And then 2 weeks after he got the gun, that's when Hallie was upset over Hunter's drug addiction. She took the gun and put it in a trash can across the street from a school. And then he was enraged. And he told Hallie that she had given the FBI the impression that he was an abusive pedophile with homicidal tendencies. And the gun was found by an elderly man who was looking for trash and cans and bottles. Isn't that nice? Anybody could find it. And then the Secret Service was brought in the investigation. Don't forget. So there's a lot of stuff into this. Holy cow. This is like a damn Jerry Springer episode. This whole fam-damly. Good heavens. This is just crazy. So wow. So he had drug deals. Like, apparently, one of the drug deals that he had was one day before the purchase that the feds are investigating. One day before. He was on drugs. I mean, you have enough evidence here. Why is there not a charge? Oh, because he's D different? Good heavens. But hey, if you bought a pistol brace that's legal for you to, that was legal for you to purchase, and the ATF said numerous times that it was legal, and then all of a sudden they decided that it wasn't, and then they gave you like X amount of time to either, you know, eat your cash and hand it over to them or destroy it, then you're a felon. They'll go after you for that, but they won't go after Hunter Biden for this. Just trash people. Just garbage. So yeah, that was his 48 hours. I'm exhausted from just reading that.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, he had to have been on cocaine. That's crazy. Good night. So that's the, we'll see. Yeah, I mean, we'll see. They're investigating it. And then with all those other investigations, now you've got House Oversight fighting the FBI. The FBI is like, oh, we can't turn over the FD 1023. We can't turn that form over because we need it for this other criminal investigation we have. It's for our other criminal investigation. That's what we need it for. Good heavens. Now, in addition to this, Hunter Biden is expected to appear in court in July. Well, he was ordered to appear. I shouldn't say expected. He was ordered to appear. So the judge in that case, that's the child support case still. He's been trying to hide his money. He's been trying to hide his finances to reduce his payments to his ex-lover so he doesn't have to support his daughter at the same rate that he supports his other kids. And that's kind of the thing that the judge is going to take into consideration. Like, most people would look at the amounts being asked for and would be like, that's insane. Why do you need... But that's how much he's spending, apparently, on his children with the other woman, women, I don't know. And the judge takes into consideration the equal treatment of the kids. And so if she's having to fight him to get an equal amount for her daughter, I don't see why that's a bad thing. I mean, she get it, girl. Go out there and you get that. It's Joe's money anyway. Actually, it's probably the CCP's money. So, you know. But they said that the judge told him that he's going to throw him in jail if he doesn't show up. Again, this is the second time this has happened. So they've been going back and forth. He's concealing how much money he has. He won't answer the financial questions that the lawyers have been asking. And so the judge, Holly Meyer, said he's got to provide evidence for 13 answered questions. And he's got to get this like on bank records and all this other stuff. It has to be done. So we'll see, but good heavens, what a mess. Just an absolute mess.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
All right, so a couple of things here. In England, I don't know what they're doing, but they need to quit this. The syphilis cases have been at the highest level for 75 years. They've been at highest level as they have been for ever in the past 75 years. That's where they are right now. Figures show that gonorrhea diagnosis rose by 50%. What are you doing? Stop. Stop. Vaping, apparently, according to a survey, helps to fuel a huge rise in bad behavior on planes. Why does vaping fuel? I don't know, but apparently they said unruly passenger incidents are a third higher in 2022 than in 2021, according to analysis by the International Air Transport Association. They said that the aviation body recorded an increase of 37% year on year, and usually they involve, you know, non-compliance, verbal abuse, intoxication. Oh, and then you know what? People sneaking into the bathrooms to vape. You can't do any of that on a plane. I don't know why that's... Is that... That's not new. Everybody's known that, right? Okay. Well, I don't know why they do it, but they've been doing it. Mel Gibson, I don't know if this is true or not, but apparently, I reached out to a friend of mine, asked this. He's being rumored to be making a documentary about Jeffrey Epstein. So protect Mel right now. I'm just saying. There are a lot of rumors flying. He's got his own production outfit. You know, he can do whatever he wants. He's doing a Passion of the Christ, too. They said that he's currently working, the rumors anyway, on a four-part documentary that covers Jeffrey Epstein and the Ukraine crisis. I don't know. I'm just saying those are what the rumors are. I haven't confirmed them, but that's, you know, just kind of what some of it is. Daily Mail has a story of the world's first baby born from a transplanted uterus implanted by a robot, bringing hope to women who don't have a uterus, right? Women who do not have a womb but would like to, I guess, carry. The baby boy was implanted by a robot and was born in the... It's the world's first. It's the, you know, the youngest. The baby hasn't been named yet. Weighed 6 pounds, 13 ounces. It was a planned via a planned birth via C-section, obviously, Sweden last month. He and the child and his 35-year-old mother are doing well. And the pregnancy was made possible. Apparently, the mother had been struggling with... Well, for obvious reasons, and then that's what they did for the procedure. So, very interesting. They said it was the first transplant of its kind, and it was done in Sweden. It seems like that's the recovery for something like that would probably take even... I don't know how... That's pretty impressive. All right, coming up, Vivek Ramaswamy running for office of the presidency of the United States. We got a lot of questions. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us.
To catch up on all the headlines and crazy wokery, download the Dana Show podcast and get Dana's perspective on the Dana Show.
Welcome back to the program. Your lovable curmudgeon, Dana Lash, here with you. You can listen coast to coast. And you can also, if you're listening terrestrially, and of course with all the UFO news, if you're listening extraterrestrially, You can stream the program. I had to. You can stream the program. You can also watch the simulcast of the radio program, YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV, all that good stuff. Okay, so we had a little bit earlier, Mike Pence announced that he was running in 2024. I think everyone expected, still surprised that he did it. Chris Christie, I think, is in the race. They're kind of older batch. I'm trying to say this. I'm trying to be nice. I don't like kicking my own side. You know, I'm trying to be nice. They're, you know, just like you see them like every time they're there, right? They're always there. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting. All that happened this week. Joining us right now, though, he hasn't always been there. He's new to this whole thing. He's the new. He's a new candidate product in the 2024 race. Vivek Ramaswamy, always good to see you. Second time you've been back. Good to see
it's
you.
Good
How
to be
are
back.
You?
How you been?
Doing well, hanging in there, just watching all these people crowding the primary here. I just got to get, you know, your quick thoughts about the two new additions.
Look, I think that I generally welcome competition. I think competition breeds strength. And I think the debate stage is actually going to be pretty important. I think it allows us to be a better party and a better movement if we're challenged on policy. So I, for my part, am very open to being challenged. I embrace the competition. We've already crossed 3 months in advance the criteria to be on the debate stage, which I think is going to be a crucial milestone in this race. I think all the polling before the debate stages are basically irrelevant. And I think, you know, I'm about where Trump was, a little bit ahead of where Trump was, actually, in June of 2015. We're a little bit ahead of that today. And I think the dynamics of this race are going to change dramatically starting this fall. I do think that the addition of more professional politicians to this race, and if I had a wish, we would actually have more outsiders in the race that could actually bring some fresh perspective that, you know, even on issues like Ukraine or issues in which there's a existing Republican GOP consensus in this race that folks like me are challenging. Frankly, I think it'd be better for our party if we had more additions to the race that were actually challenging the orthodoxies rather than serving up more of the same. But that being said, all else equal, I'll embrace the competition.
Man, there you go. We're talking with Vivek Ramaswamy. If you're not watching the simulcast of the radio program. So, yeah, it is going to, well, I mean, we'll see how many people, I guess, are standing on the stage when it gets there. And it is going to be that contrast of ideas. Now, you've gone, since I've spoken with you, because the last time I talked with you, I know you were just kind of getting the campaign going. Now you've been exploring a lot of these policy issues. You've come out, and we're going to talk about some of those. One of the ones that you came out, not so much a policy issue, I think you were it was a critique of what was going on in Florida. There was a bill that had been passed, and I'm pulling up my notes on this. This bill, I think it's HB 1185, and it was getting into this distribution of materials onto private property. It was sort of like it looked like a public nuisance bill. You characterized it, though, as a hate speech law. And I wanted to kind of get your explanation on why you think it's a law that's about hate speech.
Sure, absolutely. And Dan, I think the thing I said is that Ron DeSantis signed this hate speech law, and I respectfully disagree with it in the hope of having constructive debate about where we are as a party on issues of free speech. So I understand those who supported the bill. It just so happens that I disagree with it. And I think we need to be able to have respectful debate, even though I think some people in that camp took it very personally when I described it as such. So here's how I look at it, is I'm a free speech absolutist. Not every Republican agrees with that, but I am. What does that mean is that the state does not engage in viewpoint discrimination. So this is a law that, yes, does relate to private property, but it prohibits the distribution of certain kinds of leaflets on private property based on what it says on that leaflet. So you can give certain leaflets out on private property, no problem. But there are certain leaflets you can't give out depending on the viewpoints expressed on those leaflets. For me, that is the definition, the litmus test of a hate speech law in effect. But beyond the semantics of it, my general perspective is the right answer to bad speech is not less speech. It is more speech. And I think that is a debate we need to have. I've been having it with the left for a long time. I've gone on NBC, CNBC, and otherwise and pressed on the constraints on speech, making sure that hurtful or hateful or harassing speech, they will say, needs to be constrained. I disagree with that. That's not a Republican or Democratic idea. It's a pro-liberty, pro-First Amendment vision. That being said, even if it's a Republican that's signing that into law, I think that we need to be able to elevate and have that debate. And Dana, I think one of the things that I'm going to hopefully call on my other candidates to do better in this race is let's rise above beyond taking everything as a personal affront, especially if we're drawing policy contrasts from one another. The more we're doing that, the better we're going to be as a movement.
Because I was reading this bill. I went because when I first heard the and saw some of the discussion about this bill, and I was reading different editorial takes on it, I thought, okay, I'm going to go read, as I always do. I'm like, I'm going to go read the bill. And at first I thought, is this just a draft of it? Because what it says is it prohibits a person from distributing onto private property any material for the purpose of intimidating or threatening the owner. To me, it sounds like a private property protection issue. I mean, you should be able to determine what you receive on your property.
Well, but that was already the law before this was even passed, Dana, right? We already have hard private property rights in this country. And so one of the ways you understand even the way courts look at enforcing a law is to look at the legislative history, is to actually look at the legislative intent. This was clearly in response to certain kinds of, by the way, I believe heinous forms of speech, harassment against particular religious minorities and religious groups. I condemn that on the substance. But in the principles of free speech, we don't go after that specifically. So this was designed to protect certain kinds of anti-religious speech. And the litmus test I come back to, Dana, is that it used the word litter in one of the provisions of the legislation. Mm-hmm. Litter referring to literature. There are certain forms of literature that you can distribute. You know, let's say Jehovah's Witness. Let's say there's a different view with respect to a political candidate. People relatively do mail drops, right? But there's certain kinds of literature based on what it says that you can't drop on that private property. So I think functionally what happened was there was an impetus to sort of say that there's certain kinds of heinous speech. And I think there's a reasonable debate to have, by the way. I'm not impugning anybody who disagrees with me on this. I'm just laying out where I stand. Yeah. There's certain kinds of speech that there are many people in this country believe are not in the Overton window or not in the acceptable pale of what we should freely allow as the expression of certain other viewpoints. I'm actually the extremist on this. I am a free speech absolutist, which I believe the state has no role in regulating what opinions do and don't get expressed when it comes to opinions.
What are people then, what should they be allowed, what are they not being, what should they be allowed to say in Florida that they are currently not allowed to say?
In another state. So good litmus test, you're in Texas, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there are certain leaflets you
can.
That's right. and I love it. I think there are certain leaflets you can hand out in Texas that you cannot hand out in Florida. And I think that's the litmus test for a decision that was made. That was why you signed it into law. We've already had private property protections, right? You can't roam around on somebody else's property. Right. That's a familiar notion of what it means to actually have a property right. But there was an added constraint saying that certain forms of literature, especially those which are deemed to be harassing a particular, and it specifically says, based on religious beliefs or otherwise, are now prohibited. I understand. I'm sympathetic to wanting to address bad actors, but in my opinion,
what can they not say?
That would be to address. Well, I think that's the question. The state should not be determining that. So what actually, I don't want to give the state.
I don't think the state's telling you that you can't say anything. I think they're sticking up for property owners. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, so what is literature? And I know you've, with due respect, I know you've endorsed DeSantis, and I think that's fine. We should be able to have this debate. I'll look forward to having it with him. I think it's good for us to debate this. But what is on a piece of paper that someone deems to harass a religious minority is a content-based form of judgment.
I don't think anyone's saying that you can't say that, though. I will add an addendum.
Saying you can't distribute a flyer that says it. So you can distribute a flyer that says vote for Charlie Crist or vote for Ron DeSantis, but you can't distribute a flyer that says...
I don't consider the measure of suppression for speech to be determined by whether or not a homeowner support once it in their on their property. I guess that's kind of like where I have the difference with you. A quick note on the DeSantis thing, though. I'm always very transparent with my audience, but if I didn't like this bill, I'd be shredding it. I mean, that's always called balls and strikes. I just like to be honest about
I told you
this when you were on the first time.
Yeah, let me see if I can convince you, though.
Okay. Persuade.
Forget which state it is. Let's just go on first principles, right? So why not just a bill that prohibits handing out of leaflets on private property without the owner's consent at all, right? An owner has to say, they stick the mailbox flag up if it means they're open to leaflets, but they put it down because it's not. That smokes out, Dana. And this is why it takes, we live in complicated times, and this one of my roles in this race is to cut through the BS, mostly on the left.
Right.
But I will cut through the BS wherever I see it. You're not going to disguise something in woke smoke, but you're not going to do it in the language that I like.
I understand what you're saying, though, and I want to talk to you about a couple of other things to get another policy. I understand what you're saying. I just think I still fundamentally disagree that whether or not speech is considered suppressed is measured by whether or not a property owner, like a homeowner or whatever, wants to receive it. I think that that's kind of where we disagree on. I think we disagree on that issue. I wanted to ask you one other thing.
Can I do one last thing on that, Dana, just to leave you with it? Because I'm a believer in precision. This law does not include commercial spam, right? So many of us get a lot of mail, you and I probably do, that we don't enjoy receiving either. This law does nothing to protect my private property rights there. It is specifically directed at something that could be deemed harassment for a religious group. So I think that let's call a spade a spade. It is engaging in discrimination based on the kind of literature that can be distributed, based on the content and the opinion expressed on that literature. And
I want to add on that with the commercial thing. It also talks about, I'm reading some of the language of the law. It also talks about projection onto structures, like projection onto like private property,
based on opinions, things
like that.
Based on
and that's kind of, so that would go a little bit beyond the commercial stuff. I wanted to ask too about because you gave an interview and you were asked about military service. And, you know, trans people serving in the military. And I always go back to the don't ask, don't tell. A lot of veterans have said, you know, I served under don't ask, don't tell. And we didn't have a problem, you know, with that being the policy. Oddly enough, that was a Democrat policy under Clinton. But you've said that there was some nuance in your answer. So yeah. I want to make sure that I highlight that there was some nuance in your answer. But you were saying that you would not prohibit trans people serving in the military. Talk to me a little bit about this. I mean, explain to people what the nuance is, because when people do hear that, they think, okay, so that a lot of people think it's a mental illness. Disqualified from serving for having flat feet. I mean, for goodness sakes, there's a lot of considerations for that. I just wanted to get your explanation on this.
Yeah, sure. So it relates to, I'm a nationalist, Dana. I'm an unapologetic nationalist. And so let me actually rewind and share with you the policy that I unveiled shortly before that prompted the question.
Right.
The policy, one of the policies I unveiled is my support for a constitutional amendment in this country that says we would raise the voting age from 18 to 25, but still allow you to vote at 18 if you either serve or else pass the same civics test that an immigrant has to pass in order to become a citizen of this country. So that was the backdrop for this conversation. And I stand by that. That's a bigger conversation about civic duty in this country. Against that backdrop, the question then comes up as a sort of gotcha, which is, oh, well, then would you stop someone who was trans from being able to serve in the military? Because if I'm saying we need more Americans carrying out their civic duty, are you going to ban them from doing it? So here's where I landed on that. I do support a ban on trans persons in combat roles, because that compromises the purpose of the military itself, protecting Americans on American soil. However, if I'm going to stand on the side of principle, if there's a person who, and like you said, we're living in an era, I think don't ask, don't tell. Why does someone need to talk about who they're sexually attracted to when they're in military training? Well,
that's about the unity of the fighting force, right?
Right, exactly. So I'm open to having that discussion with you, but let's acknowledge Republicans or Democrats alike, that's now exactly and has been for a very long time, abandoning the don't ask, don't tell policy, saying somebody can be openly gay or lesbian and talk to whoever they and talk about who they're attracted to in the open. That's a bridge that already has long been crossed. Against that backdrop, in non-combat roles, and by the way, that applies to combat roles too. But what I'm saying is in administrative or legal functions, or even if somebody wants to be a JAG officer, I will stand on the side of principles as a nationalist who believes in civic duty, that if somebody wants to serve their country in a way that does not create risk or undue cost for other Americans, I won't stand in the way of banning it. However, I am dead set against, and probably one of the leading opponents in this country, against the indoctrination of the training sessions
and
inevitable wokeness in the military.
Because some of the criticism on that has been that you're capitulating to ideology, because they say, well, trans is more than just, it's ideology.
Yeah, it is. And so Dana, since Woke Inc. in my first book, long before this was popular.
I know. That's why I'm like, what? I wanted to talk to you about this issue.
Well, I've been the leading crusader, and I think it's really easy. And, you know, a lot of people, I see this even with the anti-woke stuff that I wrote about in Woke Inc. You'll recite those as slogans because you check a political box. Back when I wrote the book, Republican political consultants were saying nobody knows what woke is. So I believe in precision. Trans is a mental health illness. Absolutely. I think that is why amongst kids, for example, I ban any intervention, chemical castration, genital mutilation.
I don't want to hurry you. I wish we had a longer time in this segment because
treat it the same way you treat other mental health illnesses in non-combat roles. That's what I would say. And in combat roles,
you mentioned the civics lesson. And you said that you favor plans to revive civic pride, constitutional amendment to make military service or passing a civics test a requirement to vote at age 18. Is that not a big government solution for a problem that should actually be taught in the home or high schools?
That is not a big government solution, no, because actually the voting age was only ever reduced to 18 in 1971, Dana, in the context of the military draft. And so civic duty being tied to civic privileges, that goes back to our founding. Back then they said you had to be landowners and taxpayers. But even from much of our history today, I will remind you that men in this country, on pain of criminal penalties, have to register for selective service between age 18 and 25.
I know, I've got two of them that did.
Exactly. So what I would say is I would roll back the criminal features of that. That gets big government out. But I would say instead, if you want to vote, which is a civic privilege, then for men and women equally, you have to participate in that actually meaning something, which is either passing the same civics test.
It still sounds like federal coercion in a way.
It's not, Dana, and I can explain why.
Well, I got about a minute left. You know what? I would love to have you back. My microphone is... Yes.
Yeah. I'll do it in 1 minute for you.
Do it in less than, because I got one last question.
There's a test that we already ask immigrants to pass to become a citizen.
Yes.
What I say is if you want to vote at the age of 18, you can do that. Otherwise, wait till the age of 25. Mm. That simple.
One last quick question. I saw back and forth with a friend of mine between you and Dave Rubin. I got to ask you about this. Your press person had accused him of being paid by the DeSantis campaign. Is that like, what do you know about that? Do you ever, I mean, is he paid by the DeSantis campaign?
It was a question I asked Dave and he said not. So I believe he's not. But that was in response to about five consecutive tweets of David. And I was a little disappointed in Dave because he's a friend. Well,
you said that you believe he's not, but your press person accused him of being so. Is your press person wrong?
She was actually responding to multiple false accusations thatAve made to me that I was coordinating with the Trump campaign.
Do you disavow what she said or do you agree with it?
If it's inaccurate, then it's inaccurate. And Dave, I think, has said it's inaccurate.
If it's inaccurate, you're running for president of the United States. We're just talking about abuse by the executive office against people. You can't be a candidate for president and falsely accuse someone of being paid by a candidate and then just say if it is or isn't.
She was asking a legitimate question in response to five false statements that Dave explicitly made in response to actually my legitimate debate about the hate speech law in Florida. Dave repeatedly said Vivek is coordinating with Trump, paid with Trump, allied with Trump, has a backroom deal with Trump. 100% false. 100% false. So in response to five false accusations, it's a mystery why Dave Rubin, an independent commentator, would be taking this up. She asked a legitimate question. Dave answered why, and I'm glad.
I would think he's probably taking it up because you're running for president. Probably as he would do with anybody, just like I would do with anybody.
it reminds me of the left with the Russia collusion hoax with Trump. Not an iota of evidence, but stick to your narrative. Don't let the facts get in the way.
Well, you should have your press person apply that, though, when talking to voters. Your press person should do the same thing.
We absolutely will ask questions openly and respond to truth when we stand on the side of truth. And it sounds like Dave had a chance to clarify that for himself, just like I did for myself that I'm running.
Vivek, we got to get going. You're always welcome on the show. And I appreciate that you're not afraid of good discussion. I do like that.
Same to you.
Thank you so much.